Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Eating Matters, where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. I am your host, Kim Kessler, with the Resnick Program for Food Law and Policy at UCLA's School of Law, and we're broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on Heritage Radio Network. Today, I am joined by a special co-host, Evan Hanser, chef at Brooklyn's Beloved Egg, writer, and food policy advocate. Evan was previously a guest on the show, and today he's here to help us dive into our topic. But before we talk about that, Evan, I know you have a book coming out, so maybe you can just tell us what that is quickly.
Sure. Yeah. In about 2 weeks, we have our breakfast cookbook coming out, which we've been working on for a long time. An exciting opportunity to see something that we make not disappear 10 minutes after it's done. So that's something we've been looking forward to.
Excellent. And it's wonderful to have you back in the studio with us.
Thanks.
So Evan's going to help me dive into the topic for today, which is a great topic. We are going to be talking about food trucks, and we might even call food trucks the phenomena of food trucks, given their rise in popularity and their prominence in our collective consciousness about the food industry and what our city foodscapes look like. And we have really excellent guests joining us to talk about this topic. First, Jordan Lexton. She is the founder of the Snow Day Food Truck and its parent nonprofit, Drive Change, which operates here in New York City to build and operate locally sourced food trucks that hire, teach, and empower formerly incarcerated youth. And also of Drive Change, we have Frederick Coleman. He's the Drive Change liaison. So thanks for being here.
We're really excited. It's great to be here.
And also joining us from California on the line is Matt Geller. He is going to help us understand the policy and legal issues that often surround food trucks. He is the co-founder and chief executive officer of the SoCal Mobile Food Vendors Association, and more recently the founder of the National Food Truck Association. So as such, he has extensive experience advocating on behalf of food trucks. Matt, are you there?
I am here. Thanks for having me.
Great, and it's great to have you on with us. So we wanted to start first with hearing about Snow Day and this really innovative approach to food trucks from both Jordan and Frederick. So Jordan, I know that you actually got your start in the food trucks business by teaching English at Rikers for 3 years. So maybe you can share with us how that happened.
Yeah, the average pathway to the food truck industry. So I, my background's in criminal justice and criminal justice education. I was a teacher on Rikers Island. There's a public high school out there. Because New York is one of two states that automatically treat 16-year-olds like they are adults in the criminal justice system. I was aware of that for the first time while teaching and really saw the detrimental impact of the criminal justice system on my students, on the youth, particularly young men of color, particularly coming from poor-income families, recycling back into the system post-release. So I spent a lot of time thinking about and talking to them about what we could do during that fragile time of reentry that might broaden opportunity for people. And there was actually a culinary arts class in one of the facilities on Rikers where people were creative and demonstrating self-confidence and focused and disciplined. And I realized that I could marry a desire to broaden awareness about the injustice inside of the criminal justice system with providing employment and transferable skill learning to young people coming home by starting a food reentry program on wheels. The idea of food trucks were really enticing because they're mobile. They allow you to get out there into the community, talk to people, broaden awareness. They are, by nature of themselves, mobile marketing tools. So why not market something for social good?
And Fred, how did you get involved with Drive Change?
So I was in another program. You know, coming from the background that, you know, Jordan was speaking about of, you know, low income and, you know, making poor decisions as a, you know, young adult. And Jordan reached out to the program and came in and spoke with me going on two years ago and requested for me to come check out this awesome food truck and program that is going to be, you know, game changing.
And what does it mean to be the liaison?
At first, I didn't know what that was. I got an email saying that I was going to be the liaison. And it turns out I was doing that from day one. Basically, I bridged the gap between the organization and the food truck. I still connect with the young adults that work with us and the young adults that will be, you know, coming into our program. And from, you know, working alongside Jordan and Roy, I seem to advocate, you know, our mission really well, so I kind of bridged the gap between the two.
So what did you think when you first heard about food truck as being the business that you'd be getting involved in?
In all honesty, I told the people who requested me to talk with Jordan and Roy that I didn't want to work on a food truck. I started working in the kitchen at the program where I was, and, you know, I felt like my end of cooking was high-end cuisine, and I didn't think food trucks were as high-end cuisine until Jordan and Roy came in and spoke with me, and they gave me the whole mission of what this food truck is actually representing, and they asked me to, you know, help them start their business, and no one's ever asked me to help them start anything, so I was like, I'm gung-ho.
And we've also done a pretty good job of proving that you can serve pretty gourmet food off of food trucks as well, so...
Yes, you can. It doesn't all have to be frozen nuggets or something like that.
So tell us about that. Yeah, because when you said that, I wanted to hear from you. Tell us about the menu, the kinds of things you cook.
So Snow Day is the name of our food truck. Drive Change is the umbrella nonprofit organization that wholly owns our for-profit entity, which is the Snow Day food truck, with the intention of potentially down the line either owning new food trucks ourselves or we're actually really thinking about a interesting partnership and affiliation model. But Snow Day was the first one. And it is a French-Canadian themed menu, but it sources 95% of the product from upstate New York farms. So we're actually New York's first ever farm-to-truck food truck. Even our maple syrup is local New York State maple syrup. We serve things like our award. We won the Vendy Award for Best New Food Truck in 2014.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a really exciting day. And so our maple grilled cheese sandwich has been a very sought-after item. We do seasonal veggies with maple smoked rib. We do lots of different seasonal salads, and we also are just doing something that is called sugar on snow, which is fresh snow with hot maple syrup poured on top, and then it wraps up like a taffy. It's a Quebec and Montreal. So really inspired by like Chef Martin Picard and Hugh Dufour, who's now here with M. Wells, Mile End, those sorts of food inspirations.
So tell us about the learning curve, you know, coming from like a social justice mission and then all the things that you were just talking about, like this whole world of culinary enterprise, learning, you know, first the policy issues around reentry and recidivism, and then kind of marrying that with this whole other mission? How did you do it?
Well, I think, honestly, one of the biggest realizations that I've personally had throughout the past now year and a half of this business being in operation is how directly connected food justice and criminal justice are. You know, really, really rooted in poverty, in access, and lots of issues, similar issues. And what we've seen in dealing with the criminal justice policy that we're trying to address, that there's a ton of overlap when it comes to food justice. So that's been a remarkable uncovering for us. Our culinary arts director is a man named Jared Spafford, and he has spent, you know, almost his whole life in the kitchen, but working at Marlow and Sons and Marlow and Daughters and at Flying Pigs Farm with Mike Yezzi and at the Green Market. And so his background is so much more in the food justice space and the idea of being able to get a product locally, which is something we really care about because we would love to be investing money back into the local economy. It actually is an overlap in that upstate New York, one of the biggest enterprises is the prison industry. So a lot of these small upstate New York towns that used to be relying on farming and agriculture for their income are now relying on prisons. So if there's a way for us to help kind of shift some of that economy back on to the local industry of farming, then we can hopefully try and create more jobs in that space and people won't just have to go into the prison industry and the prison industrial complex. So that's one really specific and interesting overlap of these two industries, but also for us too, you know, really getting a sense through the food world that we've discovered over this past year and a year and a half, just how, you know, I think really a lot of the policy roots itself also just in human connection. So like being able to have that moment of interaction at a food truck where you can actually talk about these issues, be it the food justice issues or the criminal justice issues, is a remarkable asset to what we've been doing over the past year and a half.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is something that resonates so much with people who have been thinking about food and food policy, and especially as there's much more recognition and understanding of the role that structural racism plays in that, yeah. And obviously plays in our criminal justice system as well. And so it's interesting to hear you articulate how you see a really coherent marriage between those two and the work that you're doing.
Can we tell you a quick narrative about maple syrup that's really relevant to that? This person, Jalal, who is affiliated with the Soulfire Farm, which just got written up as Young Black Farmers in upstate New York, he told us that back during the time of slavery, abolitionists were rebelling against the refined sugar industry, and so they just started tapping maple syrup trees. So we thought that that was a really cool, resonating
piece
of what
we did. That is an amazing anecdote. That's something that I've never heard.
And you mentioned when you were working at the prison, you noticed this culinary training program as a potential route, you know, into this kind of reentry phase. Aside from that program being available to you that time, what was it about food just as a medium, like for whether it be personal connection or some people are familiar with, that drew you to that as kind of the outlet for these efforts?
I believe so strongly in the power of a shared meal. So strongly. I am someone who loves to cook, but I have had zero experience in the actual food industry myself. However, the table was always a place that my family would come, that I'd be able to learn and connect to people from disparate backgrounds through travel and eating, a way that I felt like I, in my own life, was exposed to different people and different cultures and different understandings. The power of being able to taste something that someone has made for you and to have that experience, I think it's unlike any other experience that there is. So what really drew me to building a food business, in addition to the transferable and also the licenses that people can gain through the industry as well, was really that idea that we could create meaningful shared meal experiences that would hopefully help to dispel some of the preconceived notions that people had about what it means to be formerly incarcerated.
And do you know of any, like, similar organizations that are working in the food realm? I mean, for me, I think the Brooklyn Grange had some sort of refugee sort of training program going on.
The Fortune Society, right? The Fortune Society is one of them.
Yeah. Reconnect Cafe in Bed-Stuy is a pretty similar model. There's Grayston Bakery in Yonkers, New York. We take a lot of our inspiration from Homeboy Industries in Los Angeles as well.
We actually had on last week, we had on Robert Egger of LA Kitchen in D.C. Central.
Absolutely, so. Them as well. And then there's Cafe Hope, Cafe Reconcile in NOLA. So they've kind of like sprouted up a little bit, but clearly it's something that people are recognizing can really be this transformative practice.
And is there any way in which all these organizations, you know, I think you see kind of chefs or people in the food realm now organizing around particular issues, whether it be environmentalism or sustainable food or food justice. Is there a network kind of developing in this area? Because, you know, chefs, when they start restaurants these days, you know, are thinking about where am I going to source my food? Like, how is the life of the cow that I'm going to serve? But I think there's still a gap in business owners' minds where they're taking more direct responsibility for the people they're employing. It would be nice to see, I feel like, a concerted effort on that. Is there any sort of network growing up out of that?
So that leads us into like where we hope to see this go a little, which is, you know, where there is at this moment no unifying effort truly. But we would really like, I've worked actually on the kimchi taco truck before starting Snow Day to kind of get my bearings in the food truck world. And what we'd really love to do is create a cohort of food truck owners that are basically, you know, a tagline as a food trucks for social justice, we would love to eventually invest in a commissary space here. And then those trucks could park in that space. Mm-hmm. It'd be like a higher end commissary, better amenities, is like a parking garage for food trucks, and all New York City food trucks actually have to park in one. So we'd create a better space. There would be a training facility right there, potential for retail as well. And everyone who parked there would be required to hire directly out of our program, which would really allow us to scale. And we've seen great response from other food truck owners. We've met with people, had small meetings. If those doors were open today, we feel very confident that between 15 and 20 businesses would be really committed and would take the ownership over the Drive Change mission, have the affiliation on their truck, make it visible. Because we're also demonstrating, too, that being socially conscious is really good for business as well. So, you know.
And are you a B Corp?
We're not. So we're a strict hybrid nonprofit for profit. But if we were to form this other with the potential for this commissary mission, we might actually end up forming a separate entity to go into that. And then we would definitely look into making that a B Corp.
Great. So I want to take a break soon and bring Matt in and hear from him. But before we do that, I'd love to hear from both of you a little bit about what you think customers do take away from the truck and how often there is that interaction around where they get to hear the whole story, or if you think it's really just more about the food for most of them.
Well, being that some of my job is to, you know, interact with a lot of the customers besides serving the food, you know, basically spreading the message. A lot of people do walk away with a better understanding of what's actually going on in our criminal justice system and the food industry itself. And needless to say, you know, a great meal. A lot of people were surprised to try some of the stuff that we've served off the truck. You know, Jordan wasn't able to, you know, speak upon some of the facts that we change up our menu so much that people can come to the truck and have the same meal or all together have something entirely different. For Halloween, we served heart, and it was beef heart and chicken heart, and a lot of people just came up to the truck and had a brand new experience to, you know, something different.
Yeah, we've know that, like, you know, the food has to be good, right? Like, we believe that in order to really make that connection, the food has to speak for itself. It has to be good. But with that moment, once that happens, you know, it's really like you're waiting, you're right there, and we're right there to also engage you in what our mission is. So we do things like a criminal justice quiz at the truck as well. We relate it back to things that are happening currently, and we have a screen on our truck that's hooked up to the internet too to kind of help convey that message.
So I have to get to your truck clearly because I am thinking, okay, food truck, like sunny day, delicious food, maple syrup pop, and then criminal justice facts. Like, how, like, tell me more about that marriage, that moment for the customer. Like, so you take their order for something delicious, and then You know, how do you make it feel like part of one thing?
That's exactly what actually happens. You think about it, when you're ordering your food, you have that moment that you're talking amongst each other, and you know, you make an idle conversation, but you're really thinking about, I really want this food. I've paid my money, I want the food. So within that 3 to 5 minutes that you're waiting on your food, you have either me or, you know, one of the other Snow Day employees, you know, basically engaging them and explaining exactly what is going on and what this truck is here for. You know, a lot of people just think they're coming out to this truck to get awesome food truck food, and to get hit with this message, a lot of people walk away really informed. So yeah. It just in that 3 to 5 minutes, our program director, Roy Waterman, likes to, like, really, really engaged me to get a 30-second pitch. Mm-hmm. So, like, it usually goes longer. Let's say it does go longer than 30 seconds because we do so much. You know, needless to say, the food industry, the criminal justice industry, some of the great amenities that just the truck is involved in itself, like the refurbished wood from Hurricane Sandy that is decorated on our truck, the screenplay, just so much is going on.
And to Evan's point earlier too, like, I really do think that people want to know that their money is where it's going, what's going on in that business that it's going to. And so for us, like, the transparency of being able to say all of the money you spend in this truck is recycling back into this program to support this reentry program that we run. It's a remarkable thing to be able to give that to somebody who's there waiting in that moment. And also, you know, I think the focus on hospitality has been such a huge piece for us, like really taking on that understanding and principle that we want to create community. We use the food truck as a mechanism to do that.
Yeah, and I think it fits in actually with, you know, what a lot of other chefs and restaurants and food producers are trying to do in terms of bringing more visibility to what's going on behind the food or beyond the taste. So we'll take a short break and we'll come back and we'll bring Matt Geller into the conversation.
You are listening to It's Cold and Beautiful by Magical Mistakes. This is Eating Matters on Heritage Radio.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
And we're back on Eating Matters, and today we're talking about food trucks. We have here with us in the studio my guest co-host, Evan Hanser. We also have of Drive Change, Jordan Lexton and Frederick Coleman, and joining us via phone, one of the nation's foremost experts on food trucks, Matt Geller. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So we're so glad to have you on to add a little more context to what we've been hearing with the work that Drive Change and their Snow Day food truck is doing here in New York. But to get some broader perspective, can you tell us generally about what the rise of food trucks have looked like across the country, and then your own organization's work in helping to make that happen, particularly on the ground in Southern California?
So, you know, we started an advocacy organization 5 years ago, really as a reaction to the growth of the trend. It grew very, very fast in Los Angeles County because when people wanted to open trucks, we had such a huge inventory of trucks to be rented that it grew very fast, and the regulatory bodies were kind of throwing out fake regulations. So we started this association really to give a voice to the food trucks and to push back against some of the regulations that we found to be a problem.
Why was that, that there were so many trucks waiting to be rented?
Pardon?
Why you said that there were so many trucks just waiting to be rented, which made it a really quick growing business there. Why was that?
Well, after 2008 and kind of the fall of the economy, the construction sites dried up. So the traditional trucks that had service construction sites for years, especially during the economic boom, they went out of business. Their trucks were either returned to the renter or just given back to the owner with, that they had bought them from. And so they were just sitting on commissary lots. We have right now over 2,600 trucks permitted in the county of Los Angeles.
Wow.
And at its height, it was around 3,000 trucks. So even now, not all of those old trucks have been rented out. So there's still, it's still very easy to find a truck with a health permit in Los Angeles County.
And what were some of the kinds of obstacles that entrepreneurs were encountering in different localities across Southern California?
Well, in the big thing was just overreach in regulations. In California, we've got a great vehicle code that says municipalities may make regulations in the interest of public safety. So bans on distance restrictions from restaurants, time limit regulations that serve no public benefit, those things are not valid here in California. And we have a lot of good case law supporting our position. So, you know, when I first started the association, there was a 100-foot from restaurant law that was being enforced against trucks. And I had to go tell the police department that that had been ruled unconstitutional in 1979. So the things like that took us some time to kind of peel back. We did have to sue 13 cities to get their regulations basically removed. So what we've really advocated for, not just in Southern California, but as we've helped other associations start, is smart regulations that are based in public safety and public health that protect consumers and help small business owners do their business in a safe and manageable way.
So I know that you have made the argument that food trucks are actually good for restaurants and good for the economy overall, and it's not something maybe that every restaurant owner has shared your view in the past, and I mean brick-and-mortar restaurant businesses. So tell us, you know, why you would say food trucks are good for cities and ultimately good for the food industry.
Well, you know, I think competition in any industry is good. We can start with that. In the food truck industry, what the food truck industry has done has really created a lot of innovation. You know, the food industry, because it's so expensive to get into from a restaurant side, and I used to run restaurants, it can be a little stifled. You know, you've got this great idea as a chef, but the guy with money is a little nervous to give you all this money on something, an unproven concept. The food truck industry has come in and kind of ignited people's imagination of what the public may want. 10 years ago, if you would have told me that Korean-Mexican fusion was something that to put money behind, I would have laughed at you. I would have never thought it. But the food truck industry has helped really expand the culinary landscape of every city it's been able to touch. And I think restaurant owners are able to gain from that. And food trucks become restaurant owners eventually as well.
We are all so happy that that fusion happened and gained ground.
Yeah.
So, is it the case that it sometimes goes the other way, too, that restaurants create food trucks?
Definitely. One of the first food trucks in Los Angeles was the Border Grill. And interesting story, interesting comment from Border Grill. I was on a panel at the National Restaurant Association Convention, and someone asked the owner of Border Grill if she was making a lot of money from a food truck. And she said something that kind of shocked me. She said, "I'm not losing money. And the business in my restaurant is up 25%, so I don't care." It was She uses it as a roving billboard in Los Angeles that stops every once in a while and feeds people tacos and reminds them how much they love her restaurant.
Right. And I noticed with your newly launched venture, the National Food Truck Association, I happened to read through the board member list, and I saw that you had several lawyers on your board, and they're in addition to being food truck entrepreneurs. So an unusual marriage of careers, but I was interested to see so many lawyers, and I guess, would you say that speaks to how complicated this can actually be, getting these businesses off the ground?
It's not just the businesses off the ground. It's maneuvering through the regulatory framework. I mean,
I just want to tell you, Jordan is,
and you've got
Jordan is nodding enthusiastically as you say all of this, and I'm wondering if Evan thinks that more regular restaurants could use lawyers too, with some of the hoops that they have to jump through. But I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
In a typical food truck, especially in the LA County area, I mean, they've got licenses in 10 different cities. They're dealing with 2 different counties. They have to deal with the planning department and, all of those areas as well, whether they can vent from private property. So they're kind of awash in regulations from all different sides. And it can get quite complicated. And from an association standpoint, I think that's why people in the industry with a legal background end up jumping to the aid of their respective association because they have a little bit better handle on the regulatory issues that everybody's going to have to deal with.
So Jordan mentioned to me before we got on the air that you all have actually met. So Jordan, tell me where you met.
So Matt and I are advisory board members at the Food Expo 2015. They're doing a big food truck thing. So
we were in Milan.
Yeah. So we were put in touch by Elizabeth Jones, and we had coffee at Coffee Shop in Union Square. Like, when was it, Matt? 6 weeks ago? Five weeks ago?
Yeah. Six weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, so, it was just really great to meet Matt, to hear about all the work that he's done out in Los Angeles, and he's been really resourceful for us in thinking about the similar, but, very, like he said earlier, it is geographically so specific what these challenges are. So having people in the actual cities that are looking to, make some change is so necessary. But he's been a remarkable resource to us in trying to think about what Drive Change can do from a policy side here in the city.
Yeah, and one thing that everything is regional, right? It's a very regional advocacy push, but the one thing that's not regional is our message. And our message is we're food truck advocates first and consumer advocates a close second. And so we're always pushing, city councils, regulatory bodies to understand that they have a duty to their consumers to promote competition and to allow them to decide where they're going to spend their money. So it's really, really, while the strategies may be different around the country, the message is always very similar in that, let the consumers decide. Let's fight for a broader culinary landscape wherever we go. How we get there is different depending on where you are, but the message is always pretty similar.
Matt, I asked a similar question to Jordan earlier, but as someone who's really has the lay of the whole food truck landscape, I wanted to bring it to you as well. I know, the association does a lot of work on the policy side for food trucks and getting them started, getting them up and running. And with all the hurdles, it sounds like there are, in addition to making great food and hiring people and all the normal business stuff, it's pretty impressive that food trucks like Snow Day would latch onto something like Drive Change and get an issue or mission-based element of the business in place. Do you see a number of food trucks doing that? Is there something about, having a food truck, being kind of a part of a community or a number of communities that drives people towards those sort of change-based missions? And is there anything the association currently does or hopes to do to support those sorts of endeavors in the future?
Well, I think the fact that they're itinerant and they're always moving makes them want to connect with communities. Snow Day, Homeboy Food Truck is one of our members. So they're really kind of outwardly, that's their mission is to drive a cause. But food trucks generally that don't have that mission do their best to connect with communities. And so you'll see food trucks, and our association included, doing lots of fundraising event, 10% to student body associations. We do a food truck event every week, every Tuesday night, that's raised over $225,000 for one museum in Santa Monica. So just the fact that they move around really makes them want to connect. And when they connect, they're able to use their popularity and their ability to move around to really raise money, bring awareness to certain causes that piqued their interest. And so it's a very common thing in the food truck industry, especially in Southern California, I see.
So Jordan and Fred, I want to ask you about hearing this talk about entrepreneurialism. Do you think that there's a connection there with your anti-recidivism work? Or is it more about the core skills and certifications? Or is there something about small businesses that makes a lot of sense for you to have your trainees involved in?
I think it absolutely, yes. I mean, Fred can talk about this too, but we, like all, since this past year has been a pilot year for us, we hired we hired 10 young people this whole year. And we've just built this entire company and business all together. And there is nothing like that. Like the entrepreneurial spirit, the ability to be very close to decisions, to see ideas that you have be implemented into practice. It's a remarkable thing. I think that that generates a great sense of self-worth in people, which is unbelievably valuable. But I do think in general, the idea that somebody can be a small business owner is also a very powerful tool when thinking about future and what the future looks like. And I think the food truck industry certainly, you know, as Matt was explaining, with the excess of food trucks in Los Angeles and the ability to rent them and try out concepts to be creative, that allows for that. We'd love to see drive change here down the line if we're able to get some of this infrastructure in place by way of the commissary to have that kind of ability to allow young people who come through our program to test out concepts, to try ideas, to learn what that would take to eventually be able to even take something that has, you know, be able to franchise it out or do something that allows somebody to really effectively run their own business.
Yeah. Right now we actually do that. We actually encourage our team to basically, you know, get creative. A lot of the stuff that we have served off the truck has been through all of us having a meeting together and coming up with some of the great food. Some of the great stuff that I know came from, even though Jared Spafford is the Culinary Arts director, he does, you know, let us pretty much do whatever we want in the kitchen. So
everybody has a say in what's delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So even our new manager, Darius, he came up with a couple of great things to go on our grilled cheese. Like, we do add things. It's not just a regular, simple old grilled cheese. This is, as Roy likes to say, grilled cheese on steroids. So how do you make steroids better? You add something else to it. So we've all contributed to, you know, changing up the menu and figuring out what we want to serve.
Yeah, and that creativity is, I think, really central to entrepreneurialism. So I do think that that's could be a really valuable component of all this.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, have you, I don't know how exactly you think of, you know, what's the end point of this program? Is it someone going off to start their own food truck? Is it someone going to work in a restaurant or another food truck? Mm-hmm. Or just moving into another kind of like successful, stable job after that? Are you at the point where you've kind of like graduated people?
Yeah.
And what does that look like?
So our program is a 6 to 8 month transitional jobs model. This past year was our pilot year, so we're actually launching the full program this spring. First 2 months are all training. Young people come in, they get their food handler and safety license, mobile vending license. We do a hospitality training. They learn how to work the truck, and then 4 months of employment. And then if at the end of 6 months people still need some time, there's their 2 month like cushion at the end. But we are looking to place people into full-time jobs in the food industry. We have success at placing people at Witchcraft so far, and also Great Performances, the catering company run by Liz Newmark. And then also we want to be able to create other channels for people. I think back to that entrepreneurialism point, the food industry is a fantastic industry. It's a great industry for people coming out of jail and prison because it's a little bit less restrictive in terms of entry. But also we teach classes in social media, marketing, money management. We want people to say, like, this is the part of the business that inspires me, and be able to turn that into a career. So we have to be able to have those connections, find those companies that want to work with us as well. We think that being in the Pfizer building with these other small food businesses will be a really great ally for that. And then also if they're culinary arts programs, or if they're programs through colleges that people want to go back to, we want to be able to create those channels as well. So absolutely. And so we've graduated some people, but it's been a little bit more organic than it will be kind of moving on from here.
And is there anything that you're doing going back to folks who aren't involved in the criminal justice system yet? In you know, peers, former peers of yours, Frederick, you know, where you're doing outreach before people start down that path.
I think that's what our like maybe further down the line, we actually would be an alternative to incarceration. If everything goes as planned, there will be no formerly incarcerated youth. So we would have to find something else to do.
Yeah, like our goal is to not have to be in existence, quite honestly. But
so it's part of your advocacy strategy.
Yeah, but right now, I mean, but at the same time, you know, there are way too many people that are impacted by the criminal justice system, and it is our reason we get up and do the work we do every day. So, you know, while we recognize that there's a remarkable amount of people who are like touched and get to have experience with us by nature of just coming and experiencing the food at the truck and experiencing us at the truck, our focus on this population probably won't shift. We don't really see it shifting. We see it staying pretty clearly in working with young people coming home from jail and prison.
All right, great. Well, we're going to have to leave it there because we went a little bit over. It was such a great discussion. Matt, I want to thank you for joining us from California.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Excellent to have you on. And Jordan and Fred, really glad to have you here. Jordan, I've watched with admiration as you brought this from an idea to reality. So it was excellent to see you here today and hear about how you've grown. And Evan, thank you for being on as a co-host. Great to have so much fun in the studio, more than just me. So that will bring us to the close of this episode of Eating Matters. And I want to thank Tim Archer for our show music. I want to thank our assistant producer, Talia Ralph, and our engineer, Liz Smith. You can find the show here at Heritage Radio Network or at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks, everyone, and talk to you next week.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, listeners, we're nearing the end of our 15th anniversary fundraising campaign, and we need your help to meet our goal. This campaign offers you a chance to win a unique food and music experience in one of the most exciting cities in America. Here's how it works. Donate to HRN and you'll be entered to win dinner for two and two tickets to a concert in one of eight amazing cities: New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Nashville, Las Vegas, Charleston, Ardmore, Pennsylvania, and Asheville. All donations support our work educating food system storytellers. And when you donate, you can choose one of those cities and you'll be entered to win dinner and two tickets to a show. So help us reach our goal and enter to win dinner and a show in the city of your choice. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15. Thank you.